So, I know that we're now in the season of commencements. We have people who are graduating all over the place. I know Concordia already had it. I know LCAD already had theirs, and their commencement just Friday. And I know that we're still in that season. And I always find it funny because then we get to Father's Day. And moms, you guys are so awesome. You get the day all to yourself. But with Father's Day, it's always a celebration of dads and grads, and I don't understand that personally. But that's okay. I don't mind sharing it with graduates. But we had a chance to have a commencement speaker give his talk to us at LCAD. And commencement speeches are kind of all the same, it feels like to me, right? What are they trying to do? They're trying to fire up these kids. They're trying to say, hey, you know, go out. You're going to be awesome and amazing, and you're going to do great things. I don't know how many times I heard the phrase, you are going to change the world, right? You know, do you remember those days when you, especially a girl, you could change the world, and then sometimes it doesn't actually happen that way. But especially at graduation, this is the time to do it. I went ahead, I hopped online. I said, give me some of the best quotes from graduation speeches. So I grabbed a few of them. J.K. Rowling, we do not need magic to change the world. We carry all the power we need inside ourselves. We have the power to imagine better. Isn't that great? Great. All right. Helen Mirren, the trick is to listen to your instinct. Grab the opportunity when it presents itself and then give it your all. Same day. But it's really important to remember that, like a hangover, neither triumphs nor disasters last forever. They both pass and a new day arrives. Just try to make that new day count. Isn't that great? Man, do you feel inspired? That's great. From Ed Helms, don't be afraid of fear because it sharpens you, it challenges you, it makes you stronger. And when you run away from fear, you also run away from the opportunity to be your best possible self. Oh, isn't that good? That's good stuff, man. Joss Whedon, you will be so many things, and the one thing I wish I'd known and want to say is don't just be yourself. The next line is a little fun. So, be all of yourselves. Don't just live. Be that other thing connected to death. Be life. Live all of your life. Understand it. See it. Appreciate. And have fun. So be all of yourselves. I don't know. Maybe there's a problem. All right. And then Denzel Washington, who, of course, you know, he's a good speech man. I found that nothing in life is worthwhile unless you take risks. Fall forward. Every failed experiment is one step closer to success. You've got to take risks. You will fail at some point in your life. Accept it. You will lose. You will embarrass yourself. There is no doubt about it. Never be discouraged. Never look back. Give everything you've got. And when you fall through life, fall forward. Isn't this great stuff? Right? Giving his commencement speech. And he has been reminding the people of stuff. And last week we talked about never forget. You know, never forget the goodness of God. Never forget what he has done. And then we get to chapter 10. And we are going to have what I believe is possibly the worst commencement speech ever written. How horrible you. And it goes something like this. Remember how horrible you are. I'm reading through this text. I'm like, wow, this is going to be an interesting text to preach. Because he asks you to remember how bad you are. I kind of want to be invited to be a commencement speaker, and like, I'll just preach Deuteronomy 9. Wouldn't that be great? Yeah, you could see me at the seminary saying, you are all terrible people. Woo! It's such a great thing. Yeah, and so we're going to be hitting some of this stuff that I find very fascinating. He's going to be reminding them of who they are, and he's going to bring to mind one of their most embarrassing sinful situations. Now, when we get there, I'm going to be asking you some questions, too, about your most sinful time of your life, whatever that was. Right, which one? There's a lot, I'm sure we can all say. Our sinful self. What is it designed to do? Why do we as Christians go back to some of our greatest sins? And I think there is a reason why Moses wants to do that for the Israelite nation. So, Deuteronomy chapter 9. Hear, O Israel, younger than you, with Jordan to go in and dispossess nations greater and stronger than you, with large cities that have walls up to the sky. The people are strong and tall. They are the Anakites. You know about them and have heard about them. Who can stand up against the Anakites? Isn't this a great speech? Like, you are all going to go out into this world and you're going to face problems way bigger than yourself. You're going to face circumstances that are insurmountable. And already I'm sure the people are like, okay, I don't know if I like where this speech is going. It gets worse. It's fantastic. He does remind them, but be assured today that the Lord your God is the one who goes across ahead of you like a devouring fire. He will destroy them. He will drive them out and annihilate them quickly as the Lord has promised. Oh, sorry. I skipped on. He will destroy them. He will subdue them before you. And you will God annihilate them quickly as the Lord has promised. So you're going to face some big stuff. God is going to go ahead of you and do all the work on your behalf. So when you go in, it will essentially be ready for you to do what you need to do. Say to yourself, the Lord has brought me here to take possession of this land because of my righteousness. Right? Because this is what commencement speeches are all about. Go out, change the world, subdue the nations, change F because you have the power and the resources and the ability to make those happen. And what Moses says is, whatever you do, don't say it's because of you. Now, it's okay, again, as a Christian, we can talk about how we have God with us. That's wonderful. But I do believe that this is still one of the many reasons why non-Christians have issues with Christians, is because we often end up appearing more, haughty and prideful than we really should. I mean, let's face it. I know when I turn on the news, I go, man, I am so glad I am not that bad. There are some sin-filled people in this world, right? There's some righteous, I'm so God of nasty things, and I'm so glad that I'm so righteous, I'm so good, I don't fall into those traps, I'm not a sinner. It is so wonderful, just like the story that Jesus said of two men who stood before God, and one just said, I am so glad I am not like insert pagan person here. He says, when you receive victory, when you go and you conquer the world, remember this, you are horrible. You are not worthy. In fact, your righteousness is so bad, we could point to a whole lot of different examples, and that's what he ends up doing. And he reminds them, the Lord, after the Lord your God has no, it is on account of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is going to drive them out before you. It is not because your righteousness or your integrity that you're going in to take possession of their land, but on account of the wickedness of these nations, the Lord your God to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Understand then that it is not because of your righteousness that the Lord your God is giving you this good land to possess, for you are a stiff-necked people. Right, aren't you feeling really good about yourself now? Right, yeah. You means, what was that? Stubborn, yeah. So stubborn, when you, especially if you are yoking a cow. Now, I know not many people here yoke animals, But we kind of understand it maybe a little bit. We do horseback riding, right? We put you pull on the rein and you can turn the horse. Now, what happens if you got a horse that is stiff-necked? It's not going to go. You're going to pull and it's going to keep going. Or imagine a cow. A cow is going forward and you've got yoked to another cow. They are, and you're trying to get them to take direction. It's almost as if the cow is made out of metal. It is just stiff-necked. That's all of you. All right, I'm feeling good about myself on that. God just called all of you. Right? Yeah? We get that way. We start living our lives. We want to do things our way. God says, here's some commandments to give to you, and we just steel our necks nice and tight. This is the way I want to go. Come this way, and we're like, nope. Stiff-necked, rebellious people. And then what he does is, I'm really thankful that he then brings a story from the past. It's a relatively familiar story. Maybe you've heard it. Do you see the heading there? The golden calf, kind of like a cow. Remember this, and never stiff-necked the Lord your God to anger in the desert. From the day you left Egypt until you arrived here, you have been rebellious against the Lord. At Horeb, you aroused the Lord's wrath so that he was angry enough to destroy you. This is Moses talking, when I went up on the mountain, we just covered that, Deuteronomy 5, the tablets of the that the Lord made with you, I stayed on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. I ate no bread and drank no water. The Lord gave me two stone tablets inscribed by the finger of God. At the end of the 40 days and 40 nights, the Lord told me, go down from here at once, because your people whom you brought out of Egypt have become corrupt. Isn't that an interesting change of words? God is telling Moses, Moses, you got to that you brought out of Egypt have become corrupt, right? Yeah, I love talking about this. When the kid is good, the kid is mine. When the kid is bad, the kid is Heather's, right? That's how we often do things. That's your kid. That's not my kid. That's your kid. And this is exactly what God is doing. He can obviously see a lot of other stuff. And he's like, Moses, there's some bad stuff going down. Now, does Moses know what's going on down the mountain? No, he has no idea. He's totally clueless, and you got to imagine, wait a second, I just got up here, I've been praying for 40 days and 40 nights, I've been fasting, you've been giving me the little peek at what the people are doing. And the Lord said to me, I have seen this people, and they are a stiff-necked people in, a stiff-necked, where am I at? Last sentence of 12. There. Idol for them. And the Lord said to me, I've seen this people, and they're stiff-necked people. Indeed, let me alone so that I may destroy them and blot out their name from under heaven, and I will make dang. Did you hear? Remember, there's only been, I'm going to wipe out the people. God said, I think I'm going to hit the reset button. I think I'm going to wipe the people out, and we're going to start over again. And now Moses is given the opportunity. Moses, these people will no longer call God of Moses, the God of Abraham. Call out, and we're going to start over, and you're going to be the leader. Huh. That's tempting. Why is that tempting? Because Moses isn't even allowed into the promised land. Not too sure how that would actually look. It would be, have you ever, and Moses would then be the leader after watching something on the news, I really wish God would just wipe that person out. You ever thought that? That's okay. You don't have to shake your head or nod. I know you do, because I know I do. There are times that we go, makers, maybe if you just wipe out this, they're thieves. Maybe they're killers. Maybe they are just simply people of a different religion than you. And we get so upset. And then what happens when we turn interior? Would like to wipe me. That's why you're here. You love me, and that's great. But, right, are there some other pastors that you go, that'd be good if that one, like, was just taken out, right? What about a group of Roman Catholics? They are rebellious. What about those mega church pastors? And they have a business, but let's be honest. They're all about show. And they have a big church, so they must be doing something wrong and pagan anyway, right? So let's wipe them off. That'd be great. And yeah, get more. Yeah, and then once the goal, mega church pastor. So that's wonderful news. There's times that we look at people and we say, those people are so horrible. I wish they would just be wiped out. And this is God saying this to Moses. So Moses has some choices here of what to do. Now, I was actually also tempted to entitle this sermon, Pray Like Moses. Because some of the stuff he does is incredible. Look at what happens. Verse 15. So I turned and went down from the mountain while it was... When I looked, I saw that you had sinned against the Lord your God. You had made yourselves an idol, cast in the shape of a calf. You have turned aside quickly from the way that the Lord had commanded you. So I took the two tablets and... Then once again I fell prostrate before the Lord for 40 days and 40 nights. I ate no bread and drank no water because of all the sin you had committed, doing what was evil in the Lord's sight, and so provoking him to anger. I feared the anger and wrath of the Lord, for he was... The Lord will destroy you. But again to Moses, Moses says, do not destroy these people. In fact, in a little bit, it's just one of the most incredible prayers. He actually says, God, how about this? Instead of wiping them out, take me out. Don't blot their names from the... And willing to sacrifice. Blot my nation of Israel. Now, I love all of you a whole lot. But I often wonder, would I be willing to sacrifice my life for all of you? I would like to think that I would. You guys are all paid for? I mean, it's incredible to think. Moses sees the sinfulness of the nation, and he decides to pray. Now again, this is one of those incredible moments where Moses realizes and he prays. God is going to... And he also then gets very personal. The very next sentence is a specific prayer for a specific person. Verse 20, and the Lord, time I prayed for Aaron. Enough with Aaron's sin in this whole thing, right? What did poor Aaron do, right? It is one of the most humorous stories when we read of the golden calf incident. Remember, Moses had gone up onto the mountain 40 days, and while they quite too sure. And they said, hey, make us a god so that we can worship that god that brought us out of Egypt. I don't know why no one at that point just kind of pointed to the mountain that had like fire and thing is right up there, and Moses seeing and go, they probably also thought that Moses was dead. Like, Moses went up there. He's been up there for 40 days. That's way too long to hang out with God. So he's probably dead. Make us an idol. And so what does Aaron do? Gathers all the gold and the crowns and the big old necklace, all the gold fillings in the teeth and the crowns and the big old necklace with all the bling, gathered all the gold and makes a calf. A golden calf. Now, this is what's funny, because when Moses confronts Aaron, he says, Aaron, what happened? He's like, well, you know, I love Aaron. I really do. He's like, well, you know how bad these people are, right? You know, the pastor talking to the associate pastor. The associate pastor's like, well, you know how bad these people are. They're just horrible. And so we gathered some gold, and you will. And it's true. We took the gold. We put it into a fire, and out came the calf. I have no idea how that happened. I really am. Go back and read it. It is one of the most humorous things. Like, are you sure that's how it happened? But we hear their sin and think that maybe, just maybe, someone will buy that sin, right? We have people in politics who send pictures inappropriately to young women, and then they say, I don't know, I guess maybe the camera was on in my pocket, and it just took, do you remember that? I love the guy's name. Do you remember his name? Yeah, Anthony Weiner. Yeah. You're thinking to yourself, dude, just change your last name, bro. But he did. He said, you know, I was just there, and it took some pictures. I don't know how that happened, right? And what are all of us thinking? Are you sure that's how it happened? Yeah, just jumped right out. I remember a young lady who, she'd gotten pregnant, and she says, I don't know what happened. We didn't have sex. Now, it did happen. We were in a hot tub, and my boyfriend did get excited. I'm thinking that somehow when that happened, yeah, they just kind of swam. Those are good swimmers, good strong swimmers. And we're all listening to this, and we're like, right? But we do that, right? We like to make excuses for our sin. We come up with great excuses, and we think to ourselves, they'll buy this. This is what Aaron is saying. I don't get it. I threw gold into a fire, and like the calf came out. That's a miracle, Moses. And what is Moses thinking? Man, I just want to slap you right now. Oh my goodness. So think about it. And when you start thinking this way, how do you start feeling? Yeah, you start feeling bad. What are some other feelings you get? Dirty? Guilty? Shame? Sadness? And that is what happens. This instant, commit some of the most awful and heinous things. And as Moses is reminding the people of this instance, I have a feeling that some of the people sitting there are like, yeah, that's horrible. And Aaron, excuse I gave, is he thinking, man, I can't believe that was the excuse I gave. It's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. Now, I understand that those are the feelings that you get, but I do hope you get one more feeling. And that is the feeling of absolute and complete gratitude to God that he would forgive a sinner like you and me. That's what Moses is going for. That's what Moses is trying to bring them to. And that's why it's really hard when we talk about our past sins. I know when I think of my past, when I think especially of my childhood and stuff, I usually look back with some pretty fond memory. Think of the past, we often, you know, that's the reason why we have a bunch of people that talk about the good old days, right? We have good old days. We forget about things like plagues and death and childbirth and the lack of the internet. Oh, wait, that might be a good thing, actually. And we remember all these things, but we forget all the bad stuff. And we want to feel better about ourselves. It's a natural thing. Don't get me wrong. I do the same thing. I don't like to think about the bad stuff I've done. I think about that stuff, and I go, wow, what an idiot. I can't believe that I said and did things that I did. And then I came up with some really great excuses. And all of them were garbage. All of them were ridiculous. So it doesn't matter how great I am. It doesn't matter how successful I am. It doesn't matter how many times I preach the Bible. It doesn't matter how many people receive that and come to faith. It doesn't matter how many baptisms or weddings or funerals I do. Sometimes I need to stop and remember, I am absolutely and utterly unworthy to do wretched thing for God. Because I am a sinner. A wretched, horrible, nasty sinner. So we keep going because, again, I know you're not feeling very dropping into despair and thinking to yourself, I'm not coming to church next week. No, no, no. There's a reason that all this is happening, right? So where am I at? 21, thank you, babe. Also, I took that sinful thing of yours, the calf you had made, and burned it in the fire. Then I crushed it and ground it into a powder as fine as dust. And I don't know why he chooses to leave out one very important detail. He also then made them eat it. Right? Yeah. You people are so horrible. We're going to take your sin. We're going to grind it up. And then you're going to have to eat it. And then, and threw the dust into a stream that flowed down the mountain is kind of a, it's kind of a euphemism, so to speak, that if you were going to go to the bathroom out in the wilderness, the stream is a good place because it just kind of flushes it away. Interesting. You are all terrible sinners. Now, at this point, I don't know how the people are feeling. Maybe they're feeling this is great. I hate this. Great commencement speech, Moses. Give it a thumbs up, A plus. Moses ain't done. He decides to say, well, that was one of the biggest ones, right? The golden calf incident. But it gets even better than that. Let me remind you of a few more places, not in great detail. But verse 22, you also made the Lord angry at Taberah and at Kibroth Hattaava. What are those places? It's very interesting. You can look them up. I'll just give a quick little thing. Taberah means burning, and this is where they're out in the wilderness, and it's super fast. It's one of the shortest judgmental things, fire place. They're out, they're complaining that they're out in the wilderness, and God sends fire and burns a bunch of them up. And it's literally that quick. And then they just move on their way. So he reminds them, you are all whiners. You are all complainers. Not drive with. I'm really worried because I'm pretty certain that my sons are going to not drive with me much anymore because I'm becoming a really angry driver. Josh and Jake can verify this. Because we go to Starbucks in the morning, and Josh, what happens when I'm turning into the Starbucks parking lot?
He tries to race other drivers because he's certain that they're
going to
cut him off in line.
Oh, because you know in advance.
You know in advance. I see cars pulling, and I'm like, nope, nope, nope. That's my spot, and I start racing. I'm hitting speed bumps, and about 95% of the times, I'm right. I cut that. No. Okay, 95% of the times I'm wrong, and they're just going to Vaughn's to go get themselves a bagel. Okay, fine. That's it. Lord, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. Yeah, yeah. I'm angry. I whine and complain a lot. Oh, my goodness. You have no idea how slow my computer is. Oh, I already have a pre-cup of coffee ahead of time. That's why when I get to Starbucks, I'm already jacked a little bit, and I'm like kind of jittery, right? Yeah. Do you whine about the speed of your computer or your internet? Do you ever watching your favorite show on Hulu, and all of a sudden that little thing that says buffering, and you're like, ah, right? And we whine, and we complain, and we are upset. You're at the restaurant, and the waitress brings you food and it's incorrect. And what do? You get upset, you whine, and you complain. Don't forget, you're not only stiff-necked, rebellious, worshiping people, but you are also all a bunch of whiners. Okay, this is good. This is good. What else did he say? Oh, Masa, yeah. So this is one where they were quarreling. And this is also an interesting thing because I find it interesting the choices Moses makes on this. So at this particular place at Massah, they're striking because there's no water. And so God says, go to that rock, strike the rock, and water will come forth. So Moses takes his staff, strikes the rock, and water comes forth. Interesting, he chose that story. And not the others to it. They were whining and complaining and quarreling. And he says, go to that rock and speak to it. And Moses goes and strikes it. Right? So he tells the other story because, you know, Moses does that. I mean, I hate talking about my sin too. But yeah, Moses, great job. And remind, interesting. Here they gave them fresh water. Wow. It's a reminder again for us that sometimes when we are evil and sinful, God does not pay back to us what we deserve at that moment, does he? Sometimes we receive a lot of great blessings. It's incredible. And then the third place, Kibroth, if you wanted to translate it, that would be called Graves of Craving. Isn't that a great title? Graves of Craving, right? They're out in the wilderness and they're upset. Why? Because they're sick of the manna. They've tried to make manna in every form and fashion. And what do? They're like, if only we had some protein. All these carbs. I swear I'm going to get fat off all of them. And I'm tired of eating all this stuff. Lord, give us some meat. And then they start craving their sinful life. They start craving Egypt. If only we could go back there, we could get all that wonderful stuff. And so God says, do you want quail? Okay, I'll give you some quail. And he sends so much quail. And it says while they are actually eating the quail, it turns bad in their mouth while it is in their teeth. And a plague wipes out a whole bunch of them. So remember, you are all craving Sinect, golden calf-like, rigid, unwilling to do stuff. Okay, and that's not it. There's one more. If you're not feeling bad enough, there's one more. Five places total. Golden calf, these three places, and then verse 23. And when the Lord sent you out from Kadesh Barnea, he said, trust him or possess the land I've given you. But you rebelled against the command of the Lord your God. You did not trust him or obey him. You have been rebellious against the Lord ever since I have known you. Kadesh Barnea, that was the famed location where they sent the spies in to go scout out the land. Yep, exactly. 12, this is terrible. This is Canaan. 10 were bad and 2 were good. Right. And they were like, ooh, I don't know. This is terrible. This is horrible. And he's already brought up this one a whole bunch of times. You are all rebellious. And remember, these are already people of God. These are already people that God has chosen, brought out of slavery. He's already saved them. And he's reminding them, you are horrible. We need help, don't we? We need some big help. This is one of those times where Moses actually becomes a prefigurement and a foreshadowing of someone we desperately need, and that is a Savior. Someone who is going to stand in that gap between us and God, between our sin, who is going to destroy us unless someone stops it. And this is what Moses does. Verse 23, I lay prostrate before the Lord those 40 days and 40 nights because the Lord had said he would destroy you. I can barely pray 40 seconds. I can sometimes do 40 minutes, very rarely. 40 days. This also makes me wonder. I didn't put it together until now because, as we know, there was another person who went out into the wilderness and fasted for 40 days and 40 nights, and I never even thought about it. What was Jesus doing during that fasting? I've read tons of commentaries. I've preached that story I don't know how many times. What was he doing for 40 days and 40 nights? I wonder if he was praying for you and for me, as he stands there and says, I am going to stop the wrath of God to come onto you. I'm going to pray. And it's interesting. Look at what he says, verse 26. I prayed to the Lord and said, O sovereign Lord, do not destroy your people, your own inheritance that you redeemed by your great power, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Overlook the stubbornness of this people, their wickedness, and their sin. He's interceding for his people. And isn't it something that we would also covenant thank God for? That when we, as covenantal people of God, be reminded that when we have sinned, and some of our sins are great and massive, Jesus is interceding on your behalf, saying, I love you. I'm praying for you. And I want to save you. One of the most moving times I've ever seen that happen is when Peter is struggling. He wants to believe. He wants to be bold and zealous for his faith. And sometimes he's so bold, so zealous, that he ends up hurting and damaging the people around him. And Jesus says these words, Peter, Satan has asked to sift you like wheat. What he's saying is, Satan has asked for your very soul. You are a sinner, and you do not deserve the goodness and graciousness of God. And he said, but Peter, I've prayed for you. I've stood where I need to stand, and I have pleaded to my Father that this is one of ours, God. This is Peter. He has some problems. He has some issues, but I love him. And you love him. So now, don't pour your wrath out on him. Pour it out on me. So when you think of the sins that you've committed, already as a Christian, believe in pre-Christian life. I'm talking, you are a Bible-believing, Jesus-loving, church-going, hand-raising follower of God, and you have sinned horribly. Jesus says, I am praying for you. I will not lose you. The wrath that should be on you, I will take. I want you to know that's how much I love you. When you think of your sin, I understand you're going to get the guilt and the shame and a lot of that other stuff, but you know what I really want you to have today? This overwhelming sense of gratitude that God would love you that much, that God would be willing to look at your sin and say, that's terrible. You are stiff-necked. You are rebellious. You are a whining person. You constantly quarrel. You crave everything but me. But I stand here to put on you. He's poured out on me, his son Jesus. That's what's happening with you and me. And Moses is, it's this great, this prefigurement, or it's this symbol and picture. It's a foreshadowing of what Jesus is going to do. And then he says, verse 28, otherwise them, and because you brought us, will say, because the Lord was not able to take them into the land he had promised them, and because he hated them, he brought them out to put them to death in the desert. But they are your people, your inheritance, and you brought them out by your great power and your outstretched arm. A bunch of hypocrites. Problems that we have as Christians is people look at us and say, those are a bunch of hypocrites, right? Don't make excuses. Don't say, no, we're good. We live our lives better than you. No. Embrace it. You are hypocrites. And so am I. I'm the biggest hypocrite of all. I'm standing in front of you. I am just a sinner, a horrible, nasty sinner who has done and said things and thought things I never should have. And I stand here sometimes very shamed and very guilty because of my past sins as a covenantal person of God. But I have Jesus, and he has prayed for me, and he has strengthened me, and most importantly, he died for me, so that now I have. Remember your humble beginnings. Remember where you started. Remember how terrible you are, and may that make you say, how great is God? We pray. Lord, I don't like thinking about my sin. It's horrible. I'm embarrassed. I have no idea why you would love us. like you would sacrifice for us. It makes no sense. And yet you are so good to us. Lord, today you have brought our sin right in front of our face. We have thought about it. We see it. We are filled with shame because of it. We are filled with guilt because of this. And Lord, may this not drive us away from you. Instead, may it have us come running to you, desperate to just be you. You. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you that you would die for a person like me. That you would die for these people. That you would die for the world. And I pray that our sinfulness highlights your goodness. That our wretchedness highlights your grace. Thank you because of Jesus, in whose name we pray. Amen.